Supreme Court rejected that argument and said that in fact it was a breach of contract on their own behalf, and then the state, get back to surrogacy one level, the state cannot interfere with that right to, you know, to contract. So, and no appreciation was given to the difference in the political position of the worker and the employer, the presumed equality of the relationship, and said that you can sue in contract. Clever people later came around and said, okay, if we can't get it for men, we will get it for, get protective legislation for women and children. And that is what happened. They went in shortly after a case called Mueller v. Oregon with legislation that set the maximum hours, not set minimum wages, but maximum hours that women could work in manufacturing, laundry operations, a series of other the other businesses. And the court indeed found that that was appropriate legislation because, in fact, women needed special protection, and primarily basing the reason for it is on, one, the fragility, but two, their role as mothers and bearers and rearers of children, and therefore we must give them protection, special protection, because the future of our race depends on women. Now, we subsequently learned that the protective legislation had, in fact, a disastrous effect on the women's status in the workforce. So that she wound up being precluded from most high-paying jobs because the special protections extended to her, so she couldn't work more than certain hours. She had to be paid double time or time and a half for overtime. Either she couldn't work overtime at all or had to be paid more money than a man had to be paid for working overtime. She could not stand on her feet for more than certain hours. If she was an elevator operator, she had to have a chair where a man had a chair. So all these things have made it much more expensive to hire women than to hire men for jobs. So clearly women were precluded from these jobs. And interestingly, all those jobs that were female dominated, or where for whatever reason corporations or employers preferred women or had women in those occupations, those always wound up being exceptions to the rules. So it didn't hurt the future of our race if women stayed up all night as switchboard operators, although it did if they stayed up as mechanics. Interesting, one of them, I did just a lot of research on this when I was in law school, when the issue of protective labor legislation was a major issue among feminists. Such things as the sardine industry St. Louis was excluded because, in fact, during the season, women once stuck those little sardines in the cans. So it's hard to figure out why certain industries were. Okay, now I think we are coming on to a current, let me go back and say that Mueller versus Oregon, which was the case that established all this, was based on what we now call the Brandeis brief. It was a brief submitted by justice to women.
By his name.
Who was the second one? Goldmark?
Goldmark and Brandeis.
Helms. That's right. The brief, which was given Brandeis' name because he was a lawyer for the National Consumer League and presented the brief and had his name on the brief, so it's forever known as the Brandeis brief, documented what they considered to be scientific evidence of the harm to women as mothers by prolonged hours in the workforce, but the various occupational hazards to women qua women by additional strain and stress of the workforce. And most of that, as I say, was a so-called it was, in my estimation, pseudoscientific documentation of the hazards that they projected and could form the basis of allowance of protective legislation. It would appear to me that we are presently moving into, or have already moved into, a similar type of approach in the labor market today, with, I think, also pseudoscientific foundation of the toxicity in the workforce being used as a basis for the exclusion of women from primary jobs. It sounds so, because we all know it, the minute we walk into the street it is unhealthy to breathe the air. We are all prone to accept immediately that most industry is dangerous to our health, and most people are then willing to make the giant leap of faith that if it's dangerous to our health, it is certainly dangerous to a pregnant woman, because anything that comes into her is naturally going to go through, you know, to the fetus, or arguably could go to the fetus and then cause damage to the fetus. And with that much research, that proposition has gotten accepted, so that you now have fetal protection policies in a large number of industries, which will exclude women from jobs on an assumption that the toxic environment could affect women of potentially fertile women. So it's not just women who are pregnant, but potentially fertile. 5 to 63. The age group is 5 to 63, because in fact there have been known cases of women who have given birth at 5 and have given birth, or have conceived, I shouldn't say gave birth, but have conceived at 5 years old and 63. I don't know.
At 5?
That's Union Carbide's standard. So, but that is the whole
I can't believe that. Where's that?
The conservative estimate is at this point, $100,000 have been taken off the market for women, and most people feel that that's a very conservative estimate. The test of this, one of the more horrifying situations was that in a case that was brought a couple of years ago against American Cyanamid, let me tell you what happened there. American Cyanamid excluded all women who were all women who were fertile from their pigmentation, room. I believe there were some 20 odd women there. It was one of the highest paying jobs in in the plant. It was the problem there was potential lead poisoning. Which is known to be detrimental to the reproductive functioning of men. But nonetheless, all women who were excluded from that, unless they could prove that they were sterile or were willing to be sterilized. And indeed, out of that group, 5 women did have themselves sterilized, which shows us that, in fact, this was a high-paying job, they needed their job, for some very compelling reason. These women were willing to sacrifice basic function. They wanted the money. That's right. Yeah. So they were willing to sacrifice their ability to conceive. But just a sense, even they had no intention of conceiving, they were willing to undergo these this operation and lose just a sense that they were still capable of conceiving children. But the horror of this was, after going through all this, a year later they closed that plant, so that these women, lost their job anyhow and had sterilized themselves. The interesting thing to note, there's no doubt that there are toxic levels in the workplace that can affect fetal development in a number of ways. I don't know enough of the science and others. A doctor in the room, I'm certainly not going to go into that. But there have been a variety of studies that have been shown to have a variety of different types of effects, some of which will affect the fetus through the mother directly. In other words, anything that happens to the mother will happen to the fetus. So if the mother inhales carbon monoxide, that will be inhaled by the fetus. There are other types of toxins that will affect the gene structure, and other types of toxins that will affect the development of the fetus. The first one obviously can only be transmitted through the mother. The second two can be transmitted through both either mother or father. Mm-hmm. Except the problem with all of these are that, one, nobody knows the level to which the toxic, how high the toxicity must be before it will indeed have an effect on the mother or on the fetus. Or you know, how that combined with other things, like if the mother is drinking or smoking or doing drugs or you know, not even doing illegal drugs, but they're taking Valium. Nobody knows what, you know, the effect, the comparable effect of those various activities might have on the fetus. Nonetheless, employers have left to the exclusion of women based on an assumption that there's a possibility that it could be harmful, and therefore we don't want to take the risk. Their reasoning is twofold. One, they will claim we really care about this fetus and we really care about the development of young children. The second is probably the more likely one is that not that the mother can raise a claim, because the mother is probably covered by the working workers' comp, but that the a born child who would not be precluded to be limited return on workers' comp could ultimately sue. One interesting thing to note on how workplace has have been looked at to date is the difference between how toxins that have been known to affect male reproductive capability have been treated in those who will arguably affect female reproductive hazards. There have been two toxins. One is something called DPCP, you know what that is, and the other is Kepron. One is a herbicide, the other is a pesticide, both of which were learned to affect reproduction through the male, both in changing the genetic structure and secondly of making the male sterile. Both of those chemicals have been banned totally. When it comes to chemicals that are arguably, we don't even know whether, in fact, these chemicals are affecting them, you know, the extent to which they are affecting the kids, then the women are excluded from the workplace.
Except for Agent Orange, it's not, I mean, that's, yeah. The causation is not so clear, but if you're saying in these other situations, it was their fault that they had that. So I think that class and things like that might come to it too. I think that this was a situation where Isabel and I had a similar reaction, which was, look, the solution is not to exclude anybody from the workplace. Mm-hmm. The solution is to clean up the workplace.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's good as a matter of principle. As a matter of implementation, it may be a lot harder. And then the consequence may be that businesses go abroad and people have less protection. So that I think both Isabel and I jumped to the global issue. Had one, the practical political problem, and I should tell you just to give an ad again for my forum thing, our proposal does have to do with legal strategies for forcing cleaning up of the workplace in a sex-neutral way. But the global thing we don't got no answer to.
Yeah, the other thing is that my answer to that was that there is an immediate presumption that
you don't
these
think that there's that much harm.
Well, we don't know. There might indeed be harm, but we have absolutely no way of knowing because none of the tests, you know, are really very clear. There have been a few isolated tests which will tell us what the results are. I mean, we now know about thalidomide. It takes a long time to learn these things and where the actual harm has been.
But there are some studies now that show we in Buffalo are particularly interested in this because of the flight path of Cuba to the maquiladoras on the border. Maquiladora, by the way, means golden cow. It's a very interesting word. And there now appear to be, for some of these industries that produce, which are engaged in certain chemicals, use certain chemicals, there are now higher rates of cancer and miscarriages among women in another culture. I mean, there's some evidence now in Singapore and Taiwan. Now, how much of this comes from malnutrition because of low wages, and how much of this comes from from the particular, the lack of regulatory enforcement in those countries of any sort, I suppose is an open question. But again, the question is, how much does one want to presume, and maybe one ought to err on the side of being conservative. about the damage that should be done, but then one that might be done, rather than, or on the side of believing that it is more likely that these chemicals may produce damage, and then concentrate not just simply on the national issue, but think of it globally.
Are environmental groups taking a stand on these issues?
I don't think much. I mean, you see, and this is why it worries me so, that as I understand the stand that organizations are taking, is just like they did during the early days of protective legislation. Let's get a half a loaf if we can't get a whole loaf. So therefore, the most we can do is protect the women who may be carrying the children. Let's do that, and then we'll worry about cleaning up the whole workforce.
I think that there are some statewide efforts to regulate the renewable. Massachusetts has a right to know law, which it's only that workers have to be informed if there are dangerous chemicals, say that they have to clean them up. The liability, and it's very hard to enforce, the liability of corporations, though, are limited to law borders, so that if a company does go abroad, then they have to abide by the regulatory law of the country. Well, we could obviously have legislation which would cover all American or multiple, or any companies which Americans had an interest there and that went abroad, and made them to the same line in terms of these kinds of things. But I mean, I don't think anyone's talking about that.
I think I'm clear. It's 4:30, so thank you very much.